The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome to the Your Favorite Band Podcast, a podcast where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands.
What's the name of the podcast?
It's called Your Favorite
Band.
Okay,
good, good.
That was a voice you might not be used to hearing. This is a very special episode because this is a band that, I don't know, maybe I've journeyed with a little bit. And to help me talk about that journey and to talk about this band, I brought my good friend Daniel into the studio. Daniel, welcome.
Oh man, it feels good to be here. This studio is nice.
Thank you so much. You might say it's clean. You might say
there's a lot of words that I could use
like
to describe it.
There's nothing else that I use this room for other than recording podcasts.
It just feels right, and I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, friend. Now, before we introduce our guest, we love this band a lot, and
yes,
we love them so much that we traveled to Austin, Texas earlier this year and listened to nothing but this band for 17 straight hours.
And not just this band, but one song.
And we're going to talk about that song, and we're going to talk about the band for the next however long it'll take. Listen, I got nothing to do.
What a tease.
Absolutely.
What a tease you are.
I'm done teasing. Welcome my good friend and yours, George Shepherd from the band Shepherd. George, how are you?
Yo, how's it going, boys?
George, it feels like we're just three good friends just catching up, you know?
This is a fantastic studio. I love the look and the layout. The styling's beautiful. The interior design, you've done a fantastic job, Brendan.
George gets it. He really gets it.
He does get it.
That's what I love about George.
George, if you had to just guess, do you think that I actually have a really nice studio? Just by the way we're talking.
If I was to guess, you just strike me as the kind of guy who would not rest until he's got the perfect studio.
Oh, you nailed it.
You wouldn't make a single episode until you had the perfect studio.
Yeah, George nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, thank you, George.
He really gets you.
George, me and Dan, we go way back. We go back to earlier this year. What a crazy story. We'll get
old buddies.
It when we start talking about Geronimo.
We can save the road trip till then, but like, you know.
This is just another episode for me. I'm just excited to talk to, somebody in the world wakes up every morning and says, Shepherd is my favorite band.
And you get to talk to him
And
right
I get
now.
To talk to him right now and ask
and
all the
me,
questions they might have.
As a fan of the podcast, Brandon.
Yeah, like, you are.
I've always been a friend of yours, but as a fan of the podcast, I mean, this is pretty exciting for me.
And
well,
it's the first foreign.
That's right. The first overseas artist.
Yeah, and
that's
you can really hear it in the old
Believe
voice.
Believe it or not, he's from Australia.
Yeah. Give us a little sentence that only an Australian would say.
Oh, g'day, mate. It's good to see you. Come around for a little barbecue and a bit of hooroo, mate.
That was so stereotypical.
I
was shining it on a bit there, but that's more or less Australian talk.
Great. I'm glad that we're not being racist when we say that. When we're making fun of Australians. Anyways, let's get to it.
Australianist.
Let's get to it. George, let's go back to the beginning of Shepherd, shall we? Kind of talk about you in particular, since we're talking to you, and what was going on before you guys started Shepherd. Were you interested in music? Were you doing stuff on your own? Or just talk about that a little bit.
Well, I was actually living in Sydney, studying as an actor. So I wanted to be in, TV and movies and theater, and that was my number one passion.
Okay.
And it wasn't until I came back home to Brisbane for a little bit of a, I think it was a Christmas holiday or mid semester holiday, something like that. And Amy was doing a song for her university assignment. She's the one who wanted to be a musician. She wanted to sing. She wanted to study music. And she was writing this song for an assignment. And I was, I mean, I've kind of been musically inclined my whole life. You know, I've like taught myself to play piano and I enjoy singing. And, so when she showed me the song, I was like, oh, maybe you could change this. Maybe this could be cool here. And I sort of gave her some pointers on the song. We really collaborated on it. And that was the first song that we really worked on together.
Okay.
And, we had so much fun doing that. And we're like, let's just keep doing it. Let's write another song. Let's keep on, let's keep the creative juices flowing, so to speak. And so it wasn't long until we were, you know, in the studio starting to record some of these songs. And, we were lucky enough that, you know, we met this third guy, Jason Bovino, through a mutual friend of mine, an acting buddy I used to know in Sydney. His younger brother is now in the band with us, and he's the third songwriter. He sort of offered his services one night when I was in Sydney. He was like, he'd heard that Amy and I had been doing this stuff, and he was interested, and he was sort of like in between bands, and he was like, well, maybe I should come up to Brisbane and we can, you know, have a jam, hang out. So we decided to fly him up for an initial 2-week period. And he ended up staying for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this all sounds just so nonchalant. Like, I was going to be an actor, and then I had, like, a, you know, a worldwide number one hit, and it just, my sister's there, and it just kind of happened, you know, and then woke up for breakfast. Like, was it really just that easy?
No, I wouldn't say easy, but it was, it took its own course, that's for sure. You know, destiny sort of stepped in and played a hand, for sure. I mean, I would have never expected to have had a career in music ever in my whole like high school growing up. I would never have said, you know what, I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to be touring, you know, internationally playing, you know, hit songs. Like that's just, it seems so foreign to me now looking back to that. And, it's very bizarre that it's all turned out the way it has.
Yeah. Say, all right. So you're in a band with mostly family, and talk about being in a band with your siblings. How involved are your parents? Is it a full family affair? Do you guys get into fights over the music? Like, this is a different experience than most bands. So, like, just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's. I mean, there's pros and cons, obviously. It's really nice to be able to have your family close by all the time. And, you know, you've always got that support network and you're working with people that you can 100% trust. But then, you know, obviously because you're siblings, you get into more fights and you're not afraid to, you know, say the things that you really, really mean, which is good and bad.
Yeah.
But, for the most part, we really enjoy it. I wouldn't rather be doing this with anyone else, put it that way.
Sure.
And my parents are actually quite heavily involved in it as well. It's like more of a family business than anything else. It's, like my dad, he works as a lawyer up in Papua New Guinea, but you know, he was really the manager of the band at the starting of all of this, and you know, he helped us to set up our own record label. You know, we've got our own independent record label called Empire of Song here in Australia, and you know, we release everything through that. And my mom, she sort of acts as a I guess band director when we're on tour. You know, she's sort of like the assistant tour manager, or you know, she just helps with checking in airports and hotels and booking flights, that sort of thing.
Wow.
So it's definitely a full band sort of full family sort of deal.
Yeah, you guys are an original Partridge Family, aren't you?
I guess so.
So
do you know, George, do you know who the Partridge Family is? Just be honest.
I keep hearing the name. I've got no clue.
That's fair. I thought that might be the case.
What about
everybody always says it. I'm like, yeah, sure.
You guys sure, are an original Jackson 5. How about that one?
Oh, yeah, without the beatings.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. No. Well, I think that was understood, right. But sure. Yeah.
It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much to be a better father. anyways, I digress. So talk about, as you guys were starting to write more music and bring in some other people into the band and stuff like that, at what point were you like, I think I'm really going to go for it with this and kind of pass on the acting thing and the things that I thought that I wanted to do and really start to focus on this project?
I think when it was actually at this festival, we'd spent – Jason was in the band and Amy, Jason and I had been in the recording studio recording like part of what would be our first album. And at the end of that, we had a festival, like a summer festival called Splendor in the Grass. And
what a name.
Splendor in the Grass.
Boy, are you sure you weren't in the Partridge Family? Like, are you sure?
And then the final day of this festival, they had Coldplay playing. Hmm. And this is the first time I've seen Coldplay, and I've been a huge fan of them for so many years. And I saw that live show on the final day of Splendor, and it just something clicked in me. Something switched. I think that was the moment where I was like, "This is what I want to be doing for the rest of my life. I want to be on stage entertaining people. I want to be in control of my own creativity. I don't want to have to audition for anybody. I want to be writing my own stuff and then having other people fit into my vision, you know, instead of having to audition and hope that you try and fit into somebody else's vision in a TV show or a movie." It just seemed like so much fun watching Chris Martin, you know, prance about on stage. And I think that was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to move back from Sydney and we're really going to go for this.
Yeah.
So how long from that moment where you thought, this is what I want to do the rest of my life, to the moment where you realized you guys were going to be successful enough to make a career out of this? Like, how long between those two moments?
Well, I think it would have been about, well, that was 2011 was that moment. And then we released our first single, Let Me Down Easy, in the end of 2012.
Okay.
And so,
and that went over
yeah,
well.
I think when, well, it went over well, but it took about 6 months for it to get any sort of traction. It had been released and on iTunes and everything for about 6 months, and then believe it or not, a radio station in the USA called Passport Approved, which is a syndicated show. Which
you cannot make that up. There's a show in the United States called Passport Approved. We just elected a president who wants to kick out all the immigrants. That's all that is.
Of course,
unbelievable.
Well, now we need this. We need this radio show more than ever.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. We do. We're bridging the gap right now, George.
The purpose of it is to sort of bring in all of these international artists into the American market and just, you know, show the radio and all of the music people what talent is overseas, you know. And a lot of radio stations listen to Passport Approved to sort of get new music and hear about new artists from international territories.
Wow.
And we were lucky enough that a radio station in Portland, Oregon, actually added Let Me Down Easy to their playlist. Oh. And so that was like the first commercial radio station to play our song. And we got to number one most requested on that station. And, you know, they flew us out to Portland and we played a sold out gig to 1500 kids. And that, I think hearing them sing Let Me Down Easy back to us when we finally performed that song, that was, I think, a defining moment for all of us.
Wow.
In that, like, you know, people.
That's unreal.
We have 1,500 kids right now singing our music back to us, singing, you know, lyrics that we wrote, melodies that we wrote. Mm-hmm. And they're all really loving it. And here we are in America of all places. Yeah. And that was a moment where I think we were all like, okay, this looks like it's going pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, and to have that happen halfway across the world is just even more unbelievable. So from your early EP, you guys have a very, you're a pop band, like you're pop, you're catchy. It's fun to listen to. It's fun to sing along. Was that like a distinct direction the band wanted to take? Or did you guys just say, hey, let's make the music we want to make? Or was it, hey, we want to be this catchy pop thing that kids can listen to across the world? Like what were you going for? Did you guys ever have that meeting where it was like, hey, we want to be this kind of music or this kind of music? Or was it just,
we are probably the least, organized band in the world. We are flying by the seat of our pants 90% of the time. So we're not making any conscious decisions to do anything really. We're just making it up as we go along, and it seems to be working really well, and we're having a great time doing it.
Yeah.
Every single song that we've written, we really love, and we're like, I guess we're naturally inclined to write those sort of poppier, hookier, melodic type songs, and if that's what people are really enjoying and that's what people are listening to, then that's what we'll keep doing. But I mean, it's definitely not our only. Only style of music. You know, we love a bit of like folkier music. We love rock music. I'm a huge fan of like chill out electronica. Like, we try and incorporate all of that stuff in an album worth of material. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a lot of people would have only just heard Geronimo,
right?
And whereas if you actually go and listen through the whole album, the first album, you'll notice a whole bunch of distinctive styles and influences, and I think the second album, which is going to be released sort of first quarter of next year, it's going to be an evolution of that, really.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
sure.
Exciting.
So kind of going off of that first EP, was there ever a conversation or a thought like, that was fun, but can we really keep doing this? Or was it like, all right, we got to put our heads down and go into this writing our full length album? Like, was there ever a conversation like, oh, that was fun, that was cool, but that's it? Or was it always like, man, we've got to capitalize off of what was going on with that EP and start writing that LP?
Again, we just make it up as we go along. Right. So we were like, well, that was heaps of fun. Let's just keep going. And right. There was never any moment in our minds where we were like, all right, that's enough. We've had enough. We've had our fun. Time to retire.
Right.
It was just like we just had so much fun with that first EP, yeah, and writing and recording and touring it, that we were like, well, it's a no-brainer. We're just going to keep on doing
sure.
that. We've obviously learned so much, and we've got all these fans now overseas. So, I mean, I guess it would have been very silly of us to cut the pull the plug right there.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was never like, all right, let's get mercenary about it. Let's write an album. There's going to be a number one hit on it, and we're going to take over the world. There was nothing like that. It was just like, let's just keep doing what we enjoy and see where it takes us.
I mean, right. Everything is just so much like, I mean, I just be confused if this ever happened. Like, I wouldn't know if George was actually serious about it or not. He's just like, you know, we just kind of thought we'd write an album and we had a number one hit. So, right. You know, and I, like, this is unbelievable. Like, the tenor of this conversation.
It's the Australian way.
It's just, you know.
Well, you boys know what it's like. I mean, you were just like, all right, we're just going to drive to Texas and we're just going to listen to this song on repeat. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got all sorts of attention on social media, and everybody's like jumping on board, and it's a bit of a shock, you know. It's similar story with us.
Well, that was nice of you.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
I mean, we're as famous as
we
Shepherd.
Are as famous.
I've said that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about Geronimo, because clearly, like, that was a big hit. I don't know if you've heard. So talk about Geronimo a little bit. Talk about where you were at, where it came, like, lyrically and musically, in the songwriting process, and how that song kind of came to be what it is now.
Well, I mean, we were actually on a Let Me Down Easy tour, so we were you know, doing a single tour. We had a bunch of shows throughout Australia, and it was literally the final show of that tour. And we were all warming up. You know, Jay had his acoustic guitar, and he was sort of like strumming in the back room, and Amy and I were sort of singing in different areas, just warming up our voices. And Jay came and grabbed us, and he's like, "Hey, I've got this cool like guitar strumming pattern, this riff thing that I've just worked out." And he took us into the back, and he had that. He just like stomped his boot on this wooden floor, and it made this like amazing booming sound in the room that he was in. And he just started playing that opening riff of Geronimo, and literally within 10 seconds, I had that opening verse melody. Hmm. And so we quickly recorded that. We did an iPhone memo, and then we had to quickly rush on stage and play the show. Hmm. And then once we got back from the tour, we were sitting down, and Jay came over, and we were like, okay, what are we gonna write next? And we're going through our iPhone recordings and being like, yeah, that's pretty cool, that's pretty cool. And then we came across that one again, and we're like, oh, that's right. There's just something really energetic about this. It was just immediately attention grabbing and engaging.
Yeah.
So we're like, yeah, let's write this. This will be fun to write. And Amy, Jay, and I just sat down really and fleshed out this song over about 2 hours. And I mean, it wasn't supposed to be anything too serious. It was just like, you know, let's just have this fun hook in there. And like, I can imagine us jumping around and bouncing on stage to this. And everybody that we played the song to after that was just really excited by it. And we found that when we played the song live, whenever we did a live show and we had that song, everyone would always come up to us afterwards and be like, what was that Geronimo song? What, that was, is that going to be released anytime soon? And we're like, oh, I mean, yeah, I guess so. It's like,
if anybody really asks you if a song is going to be released soon, you always say yes.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Like,
that's the rule.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Cause we had it. Yeah. We hadn't decided whether it was actually going to be on the album or it was going to be a single or whatever, but we knew that people were gravitating towards it. And so we did up our own little demo of it and then took it into the studio and spent about 3 weeks just perfecting it. And after we released it, we released it in Australia and then jetted off to America. We went to LA and played Muse Expo, which is a conference there. And while we were over in LA, we were just watching the song on iTunes, just slowly creeping up the charts. Hmm. And we were like, hang on, what's going on? What's going on here? This is crazy. Let Me Down Easy got to a peak of 18.
Yep.
And so when we switched on, we're like, oh my God, Geronimo's at 15. Oh my God, this is insane. And it just kept on going and kept on going and kept on going until it was at number one on iTunes. And we couldn't believe it. We were just like, it was just the most surreal moment, I think, that we've ever had. We had a number one song on iTunes.
Yeah.
And then we flew back to Australia. This is about 2-3 weeks after it had been released. We flew back to Australia and, the radio stations had all added it across the board. It had been the most requested song. It had just blown up since we'd been away. And so we were like, we came back to this sort of fanfare and we're like, oh my goodness, like how has this happened? And then the official like top 40 charts came out and we were number one. We had beat Pharrell Williams, his song Happy.
I've heard of it.
We knocked that off the top spot. And
someone had to do it.
It was a bit of a – yeah, someone had to do it. He was about to break a record too, so I kind of felt bad.
No, don't feel bad
for Pharrell Williams. I wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't think he really knows or cares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, then we had a number one hit, and that was it.
That's amazing. Off we went.
That's unreal. I mean, what a cool story.
Yeah.
I mean, just to write that on tour like that, that's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I just had a curiosity. Like, I heard it. Came across it on like some random playlist on Spotify and I heard it and it was immediately like, this is going to be a hit type of thing. So as were you able to hear it and be like, this has the potential like to be something that people might gravitate towards? Cause we have that gift, right? Like we can hear a song and be like, that actually might be really successful. Or you could hear a song and be like, that's not going to do anything. So could you do that to that song? Did you hear it and be like, man, that really has the stuff if it really is able to take off?
Well, it's hard to do that with your own music.
Right.
Cause you sort of, you're a bit biased.
Right.
When it comes to songs that you've written. I mean, like I love most of the songs that we do. And I know that's probably a little bit biased, but, yeah, I mean, you're just always wrong about it. Or I seem to be anyway. I'm always like, oh, I don't really like this song. I don't think it's got any potential. And then everybody loves it. And so I'm like, ah, okay, whatever. And then songs that I really love, they seem to be the ones that fall by the wayside. So I have no idea. I'm such a bad judge of our own music that, we just write it and then I just kind of release it and let it go out into the world and see what happens, sort of gauge what everyone else thinks. But with Geronimo, we knew that it had something special about
yeah.
it. Like there was just an energy to it that, sort of just, it was magnetic. People just sort of really gravitated towards it, and the reactions that we were getting were pretty hard to ignore. So, I mean, we knew that there was something special about the song, but nobody could have expected or predicted that the song would, you know, go 6 times platinum in Australia and sell 1 million copies in America. And like, it's just like, thinking back to it now, I'm like, it's crazy. Right. It's absolutely crazy.
So, and that actually leads to the next question, which is, it blows up in Australia, and it's not just a passing fad. I mean, this song sticks around for a long time around the world, still played in international markets around the world. It's not like it just came up for a month and left. So you see the ongoing success of this song. So what's the next move? Like, the band gets together and what do you do next? Like, what was the decision then to go, all right, what's our next step after seeing this song just go berserk?
Well, we got contacted by, Scooter Braun. So
Usher and Bieber, you know, fame.
That's the guy.
Wow.
So
are you Scooter Braun's PR guy? Like,
I am.
I don't think he needs any help.
It's not like I love Scooter or something. I don't know why I got so excited about that.
Oh man.
Well, yeah, he had somebody in his office that was like scouring the internet, or like, you know, the international charts. And
it was me.
All of a sudden it was like, who's this band? It was you. It was like, who's this band that has come out of nowhere and they're number one in Australia and they're got no label, they're independent, and what's going on here? And it was a bit of a coup, because we were the first. We've actually got the record for the longest running number one in Australia by an independent band.
Wow.
And I mean, it's only 3 weeks, but still, it's no one independent has done that before. So it was a bit of a head turner for the likes of, you know, Scooter and some of the teams in America. So they got in contact with us, and they wanted to, you know, work the song in the US. And it was a bit of a no-brainer for us. We're like, we'll show us some credentials, Scooter. What do you got? What do you got under your belt?
Sure, I guess.
No, we were obviously thrilled at the opportunity, and so we flew over there and met with him and decided that we were going to give it a real shot in the States. So we turned all of our attention to the USA and toured and did promo and did everything that we could to try and get everybody to hear that song.
And I feel like most people have heard it. I mean, you hear it in the back of, like, I don't know, movie trailers, TV shows. You guys were on Girl Meets World. A couple of guys drove halfway across the country listening to it. It seems that as though it's caught on.
Some nitwits. Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard for us to really gauge it until we're at a live show, or until somebody, like, you know, drives halfway across the country listening to it for 12 hours straight. It's like, until those moments come about, you don't really understand how much your song is out there and affecting people, because you're obviously being exposed to your song and your music 24/7 pretty much. So you don't really get to gauge what it's doing outside of your own inner circle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to figure that out until, like I said, you know, you go to a live show and you see how many people turn up, or people like you guys, you know, do something crazy with it and are willing to listen to it for 12 hours straight.
17 hours. 17, George. Listen, but who's 12, counting?
17. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, 12. We were two thirds of the way through at 12. Counting?
I do feel like we need to explain it real
we
quick.
We do, so because I think
that we've mentioned it, but there's some. So Dan and I decided to go to Austin, Texas for a festival, and decided to listen to the song Geronimo on repeat and live stream the whole thing. And somehow, I guess you could tell, George, if you want to, but somehow word got back to you and you called us, and it was this big big treat for us, like, to go all day hearing your lovely song. And
says through gritted teeth.
Hey, no, listen, I've tweeted this out. The song has come back around for me.
It's come back around for me as well.
I still love it, but that's neither here nor there. So yeah, I guess somehow you heard about it and gave us a call, and it was great. But I guess you can talk about it if you want. We don't have to talk about our own thing. Like, this is your interview, but whatever.
Oh man, it was a very, I mean, I won't forget that day. I woke up to like 17 emails.
I'll never forget the day it happened.
Yeah.
Well, it's not every day that that happens. So sure. It's like, yeah, I woke up and I had all these like emails and missed calls from our managers, which being like, have you seen these guys and these crazy motherfuckers in the States that are driving across the country? So I jumped online and I looked at our Twitter and I saw that you guys were doing your thing and it was live and you were like, you're already like 8-9 hours into it or something. Wow. And so they're like, well, do you want to give them a call? And I was like, why the hell not? they're gone this far. They've committed to it. So I might as well, give them some extra love.
Well, I tell you what, I'm a high school principal, believe it or not, George. And, I know that's hard to, when you say it out loud,
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. I'm a high school principal. That's not a like real high school
like
in the United
cool
States.
High.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I still have students who are tuned into that live stream and who were on the message board or the chat room with you. And they still come by and ask me if I still listen to the song. And like that, like it's a memory for them. So like you gain new Shepherd fans just from that experience. Cause they'll walk the halls and I'll see them and they'll run into me and just still reference it and still talk about it. So it's just been crazy.
That's awesome.
For sure.
Oh, that's lovely.
Lovely.
I'm glad
lovely
to hear
dude.
That.
And we're looking forward to doing it again, this time with you in the car with us. It'll
of course,
be a big
yeah.
hoot. So talking about that song alongside of Bombs Away, as a songwriter, is it a frustrating thing or a flattering thing for people to kind of look more at that one song rather than a piece of art, if you will, as a whole? Is that a frustrating thing or have you learned to deal with it and be flattered by it?
I mean, it's a bit of both. Some days it's really nice to be like, oh, wow, you know, we've got this song that everybody loves and so many people know about us because of this song. And I mean, we're super lucky to have been given that opportunity to show that many people. But there are other days when you're like, you know, when you're trying to play a show and everybody's just shown up to see Geronimo and you've got like an hour and 15 minutes to get through before Geronimo is going to be played.
Right.
And, you know, after the first song, people are like, play Geronimo! You're like, shh, just shut up. We've got so many other songs to go through.
Yeah, gosh, I can't imagine.
So it's hard. It's hard. It's like it's a gift and a curse at the
Absolutely.
Same time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who attempts to write songs, I can't imagine that feeling of like feeling like you've worked so hard on more than just this one song, but a large group of people just care about that one song. And you're like, no, I got all this other stuff that I worked really hard on. Just please appreciate that too. So I totally get that.
But then, yeah. I mean, it's better to have one song
no
that
doubt.
Everyone loves than no songs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely a balancing act there for sure. Is there anything as you look back a year and a half since Bombs Away comes out, like, is there anything about the album that you, when you listen to it through technically or song placement or anything in that regard that you go, oh, I wish we'd have done this differently? Or are you just like you are, it seems that,
of course, but
it seems the Shepherd family just is happy with how everything turns out. So I just wanted to know if there was anything specific you'd like to change looking back at it.
Well, I mean, it's hard to say because, you know, you're always going to pick up things that you should have done differently or that you wish you could have changed. And I mean, we with Geronimo, we spent 3 weeks in the studio with that song because I mean, we knew how much potential that it had. And we were just like, we just kept on honing it and crafting it and perfecting it and then deleting it and then perfecting it. And then, you know, just changing one line or changing one melody or one hook, or you can just keep on going back and finessing it forever, really. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a point. There has to be some point where you say enough. It's finished. We just have to abandon it. We have to abandon this song. And you know, even though it might not be finished to us, you know, people hearing it for the first time aren't going to know any better. So
right.
It's like you've just got to sort of bite the bullet and go, okay, this is as good as we're going to be able to get it in the time frame that we have. Here it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, to answer your question, there'd be a million things that I'd do differently if we had more time.
Yeah.
But, it's sort of that balancing act again of, you know, people want, well, especially with this album that we're doing right now, people want new music and they get frustrated when you take too long and, you know, you try and, you know, get them to understand that you're trying to do something that you know, lives up or is even better than the first piece of work that you released.
Yeah.
And you just, yeah.
Right.
It's a balancing act. So
say
what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go.
Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. Say what you gotta go. So let's talk about We Belong a little bit. You, came out in America today as we're releasing this, and we're going to play it later. But talk about a little bit the writing process, as you alluded to just a second ago, like starting to feel the pressure from people, like we want new stuff. Did you guys sit down and be like, we got to write something that's better than Geronimo. We got to live up to that. Or did you feel freedom to write what you wanted to write, and We Belong kind of came out of that?
Oh, there was definitely a period early this year, or late last year, I think, where we all had a little bit of a minor freak out, where we were like, "Oh my god!" Like after this success that we've had with this song, like how the hell are we gonna how are we gonna top it? Like it's like, you know, capturing lightning in a bottle. You know, we're gonna have to try and make another Geronimo, otherwise we're gonna just fade into the ether. But then after a while, we're like, hang on, look, this is really stupid. This is silly. Like, this is not how we originally intended this band to go. You know, we just did this because it was fun at the start. We only wrote music because we enjoyed it, and not because we had any agendas or because there was any follow-ups to be made or any, you know, record labels to please or managers to placate. It's all just us having fun and doing what we love. And that's what produced Geronimo in the first place.
Yeah.
So we just had to let it all go and just say, you know what, this is what the band originally was. This is the core principle of the band. Let's go back to that and write whatever we want again and just feel good about the music that we're releasing. And we've definitely got that in this second album. I mean, we got 13 or so tracks that we're super stoked on. We can't wait to show everybody. And I mean, whether or not there's, in quotation marks, another Geronimo isn't really our concern. We just want to make sure that we have a body of work that we're proud of, like a piece of art as a whole, mm-hmm. that, you know, we can look back on when we're 80 years old and say, you know what, that was definitely a step up from the first album. Yeah.
Well, We Belong is quite a track. I really enjoy it. I think it's different.
Thank you,
but
sir.
But it's really catchy as well. I think it's a little bit of, you know, what made you guys popular, but it also kind of has a little bit of a new direction to it. I really enjoy it. I've enjoyed listening to it. We can't wait to listen to the rest of the album.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the album as a whole? How does it compare to We Belong? Kind of has a little bit of an 80s flair to it, and it sounds really full and complete. So how does the rest of the album compare to that? Is it just as dancey, or like you said earlier, does it kind of go into a few different genres, similar to how your first album does as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think we like the idea of being bogged down to a certain you know, idea or sonic palette. We take each song as it comes, and whether that's a good thing or not, that's how we like to work. With We Belong, it started with this sort of like intro 80s vibe. Yeah. And so we're like, okay, cool. This is a great feel for this song. Let's keep it going. But we didn't then say, okay, every song has to have this 80s vibe to it. Otherwise, you know, it's not going to make sense. We don't think like that at all. Each song has its own personality, its own unique place on the album. And there's definitely a couple of songs there with a bit of a retro kind of vibe. I mean, the next single that we're releasing is probably a little bit like more of a late 70s kind of disco-y vibe.
Oh, fun.
I hear you.
And so, I mean, it's definitely not all like that 80s yeah. sort of vinyl neon vibe. There's a whole plethora of different styles and influences and genres on this one as well. So it should be an interesting one for the fans to sink their teeth into.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. What's the plan moving forward? Like for the album release date and you guys going on tour, are we going to see you over here in the United States anytime soon? What's the plan for Shepherd moving forward?
I told you, we don't make plans.
That's right.
we just kind of have to take every day as it comes. Honestly,
should've
it's
known
like
that answer. Really should have walked right into it.
we were originally intending to release the late 70s disco song first, and that was going to be early next year.
Oh, wow.
And so we had geared up for that to be the first release, and we were going to be like, okay, we're going to – this cycle is going to be different. We're going to have everything in place. We're going to have video clips ready, photo shoots done, like new album art. We're going to have every single ready to go before we pull the trigger. But then just a couple of weeks ago, we got an email saying that My Kitchen Rules, which is like the biggest show on television here in Australia.
My Kitchen Rules.
That's the name of the television show?
My Kitchen. Yeah, My Kitchen.
Is it like hosted in a kitchen or what?
It's sort of like a cooking competition show where, you know, there's like 12 couples, and they each have the group of people come over to their house. And they cook them a meal, and there's two judges, and it's sort of like, do you have MasterChef?
Yes, we do.
But never has MasterChef been the number one show in the country.
Ever, or not only that, it just Australians just seem nice. Like, yeah. No, we'll do a cooking show, but come over to my house. Yeah. Well, you know, it'll be a barbecue. Yeah, exactly. It'll be a whole thing.
That's it. So yeah, we got a call saying that My Kitchen Rules wanted We Belong to be the new theme song for their TV show.
Wow.
So we're like, that was a huge moment for us. And we're like, okay, well, obviously that sort of pulls the rug out from underneath us with all of our plans.
Well, that's what you get for planning, George. You got to stick with the no planning.
That's what happens, you know? Yeah. You just got to be flexible.
That's right.
You got to be on the edge of your seat and ready to jump at any opportunity and change your plans at a moment's notice. But as we see it, say Geronimo, as we see it, we're gonna have another single out early next year, which was originally going to be the first single, the lead single, then I guess the album will come sometime in the first quarter.
Yeah. Great,
and then we're gonna tour the hell out of it, and we'll see you guys in Florida, hopefully.
I hear
you.
South Carolina,
let's Florida, just, wherever. We'll travel. I mean,
your Skype deceives me.
Oh yeah, well I'm originally from Florida, so there's that.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, listen, George, we're flexible. You came to America. The least we can do is we'll come to Florida for you.
You know, we're
do another road trip. Make a road trip.
We'll
out
make
of
a road trip. Out
I
of
think
it.
We could definitely do that. I don't think that would be an issue.
Well, George, thanks for joining us. We're going to end the show by playing the new song "We Belong." I love it. Woo-hoo. I'm not just saying this because you're here. I told Dan and I told my brother how much I love this song. And listen, maybe I'm biased. Maybe I have a man crush on George Shepherd. I don't know.
At least you're willing to admit it, though. And that's the thing.
All right,
get in line, man.
Absolutely. I love We Belong, and so I'm excited to play it for our listeners. And thanks so much for being on the Your Favorite Band podcast, my friend.
Oh, of course. Always a pleasure to talk to you, boys.
Absolutely.
Thanks, George.
Here is We Belong.
Something I could do without, but it started changing when you came around, and now I never wanted to fade.
Now that we've lit this fire, we've got to fan the flame to keep it burning higher. To die another day, to die another day. I'm holding on to every minute now. No, I don't ever want it to fade.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.